This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with guess who? It's the knowingest know-it-all, Stephen Fishback.
Oh, hello. It's such a pleasure to be back in the off-season, I guess it's the on-season for the challenge, though.
It's the on-season for the Challenge USA. Still a couple of weeks to go with Survivor 43 lurking around the corner, much like this challenge finale coming up on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Stephen and I said we were going to talk about the challenge at some point. So here we are. No time like the present. Stephen, how are you?
I'm great. I just got back from the optometrist, as I told you. They dilated my eyes, and I think they kind of screwed it up. I think my optometrist technician like double dilated my eyes because everyone in the office, everyone's like, oh my God, your eyes are so dilated. Anyway, now I can't see a thing. So I was really counting on like bringing up the cast list so that I could remember who any of these Love Island people are, or even any of the Big Brother people, or even any of the Amazing Race people. I mean, fortunately, this season of the challenge is largely just about the Survivor people who we already know and love. But I truly cannot see a thing. You are a very handsome blur, and
I am
going to be flying quite literally blind when talking about the cast as anything Survivor. I do not remember any
That's
of those
fine. We're just here to have some fun here and talk about the challenge. It's great to connect with you anytime. So happy that we got the chance to do this. How's your summer been, Stephen?
It's been lovely. It's been enchanting. You know, in Washington, as I was complaining to you, a lot of mosquitoes. But other than that, it's been very nice. You know, get out. We just got back from Hawaii.
Oh, how was that?
I mean, you know, it was amazing.
Did you do this backwards? You were on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And then you came back to the East Coast to go to Hawaii.
It was for a friend's wedding. One of Julia's best friends, my wife's best friends, is from Hawaii. And she had to plan the wedding three times because it was canceled successively for COVID because they have extremely strict or had extremely strict COVID precautions. And it was wonderful. You know, it was beaching and paddleboarding and snorkeling. I was like, why am I going back to Washington?
Yeah.
Why am I going back to
And you do all those things?
Yeah.
You paddleboard, you snorkel.
Snorkeling is pretty easy. You know, you really just got to like breathe. Paddleboarding, I was able to stand up on the paddleboard, which is not something I expected of myself. So, you know, if there's a paddleboard challenge on the Amazing Race, Rob, when we're on it, you know, we've got this.
Look at you. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, very happy to have you here to talk about the challenge, of course.
You know that I love the challenge.
I know you do.
The OG challenge, I'm a huge fan of.
Yes. Well, what do you mean the OG challenge? Like you're saying that not so much the Challenge USA.
Well, I'm enjoying the Challenge USA, but like I'm saying, like my challenge,
the MTV challenge, you have long really been, long-standing fan, of course. Stephen, we've had so much amazing coverage of the Challenge USA over here on our Challenge wrap-up feed with Brian and Allie. Of course, check out their recap of this week's episode. I listened to it earlier today. I actually have some strategy questions that they were bringing up that I want to talk to you about. I've also been doing exit interviews with the challenge contestants. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. That's so fun. I had no idea.
Yeah. So I have not really, other than the exit interviews, I've not really talked about the challenge much. But I've really enjoyed it.
I've been really enjoying it too. It's very fun. I mean, I love the format of the challenge and to see it with basically our friends just dominating. And I mean, Tyson is, you know, he's the guy he's running the whole show. So it's like, what a thrill to see, you know, one of our closest friends. I mean,
yes,
I officiated his wedding. You weren't even really at his wedding.
No.
I officiated, or I was at your wedding.
You were there.
That's something you guys have in common is that I was at both of your weddings. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Tyson, just killing it.
Yep. You had a tweet during the summer that you said that, you know, basically Tyson, you compared him with the all-time greats and said, you know, on the level with Johnny Bananas, minus some characteristics from Johnny Bananas. It seemed like there was maybe some smoke between Tyson and Johnny Bananas.
Oh, it did seem like there was. I mean, there was. It's not that Tyson went on the Johnny Bananas podcast.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's like professional wrestling. I feel like that the challenge proper sort of teeters on professional wrestling.
Oh, 100%. These people just like make up these absurd fake rivalries in order to get like asked back for a rival season. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And that's something that's different than in our world. I feel like that maybe outside of maybe like, you know, there might be like a handful of people that like come up with like harebrained schemes of like, hey, let's start a Twitter feud and let's get into it. I feel like that's very rare in the Survivor world, whereas I feel like it comes up in the challenge.
People have been brought back on rival seasons because of a Twitter feud. Like that has been like the level of rivalry that, you know, you sent some mean tweets and now you have to compete together for $1 million. Will you be able to? Like, yeah, they're pretty much able to. Mm-hmm. And something I love about the challenge is that because it's basically the same contestants every season, there sort of develops this like mythology almost of it, you know, like all of these like ancient wars and rivalries going back generations, you know, and like, you know, playing off each other for, you know, because of something that happened 10 seasons before. It's very sort of fulfilling in that way. I mean, of course, it does seem, even as kind of Survivor has drifted into the world of people, and you've sort of, one of the first people to really note this, people like really memeing, people really like being performative in kind of a more aggressively camera friendly way. I mean, the challenge, those people are all over that. Like they are all, it's all like, you know, kayfabe over there.
Yeah, for sure. Can you talk about your origins with the challenge? Like, did you get into it before you did Survivor, or was it following Survivor you sort of started absorbing a lot more reality TV?
Yeah, I mean, you know, back in the day, I like watched MTV a lot. You know, I used to work for MTV. But then my the woman who cast me on Survivor was obsessed with the challenge, and she said, "You have to start." She started with me with Fresh Meat, you know, which was an iconic challenge season because it brought in all of these sort of players that then went on to kind of have this huge influence on the rest of the game. And I loved it. It was great. The first Rivals is one of the great seasons of, I mean, there's so many like amazing reality TV moments from the challenge. The first Rivals is an amazing season of television. The Bananas backpack is maybe my top favorite. That and the Billy Garcia, Candace moment, I think are probably my two favorite reality TV moments.
I don't even know about Bananas backpack.
Oh my God. It's like, so there's this, I don't, maybe it was like Cutthroat or one of those. It was like mid season, you know, like somewhere in like the 15s or maybe the early 20s. The challenge was that each of the people competing to stay in the game had to like go against like a vet coming out of the, like coming in from out of nowhere, just like an assassin or whatever he was called. And so they bring in, you know, so the two people competing were Johnny Bananas and then Tyler Duckworth, I think was the other person. And the person that they have to like last against is like CT in his prime, like behemoth, you know, stage when he just like comes stomping into the challenge and everybody is terrified. And Bananas had to go against him first. And he literally, it was a challenge where these two guys are like tied together back to back. And you had to like pull the other person over to your goal or whatever it was. Maybe you had to like do something with a ball, get it into a thing. CT literally stood up, bent over, and carried Bananas on his back over to his, like, it was like the most epic manhandling in reality television history, or certainly up there. And then, you know, Tyler, it wasn't fair. Like CT had just like, he was a little bit tired when he went up against Tyler and Tyler won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you said it was Banana. Banana is the backpack.
Bananas was the backpack.
Okay, I thought it was Bananas possessive Bananas backpack.
I mean, I think like the way it's become known is the Bananas backpack moment, because Bananas was CT's backpack. Okay. He like was wearing him as though he was a backpack.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Steven, now that they did this Challenge USA, like I feel like that, you know, you would not be interested in doing this now, but do you feel like that you missed out on this and sort of like in another time that you would have liked to have gone and done this?
Another time and maybe like another body, like another, if I was another like human, maybe. I mean, there's no way. I didn't want to do race because I didn't want to do like bungee jumping, you know? I mean, like, what about you? Do you feel like you would have enjoyed the challenge?
I think I would enjoy the experience of being on a reality show. I don't know. Like, I don't look at the challenges and be like, oh, I'd like to do that. But, you know,
it's
I think it would be fun to be there and be like, why am I here? What is this? Why? What am I doing here? I feel like that's the kind of energy I would bring to a reality show.
So you're mostly that would be there to be ill-suited for being there.
Yeah, yeah. That's like any show. I feel like just to be like sort of like just there and talking about like that this is like so bizarre that I'm here.
I mean, there are certain reality shows that I think you'd be very well suited for.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, there's many probably.
Big Brother.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an easy one. You just go there and then you lose and you go home.
Yeah. Maybe Survivor. I think you could do well at if you ever competed in that.
Yeah, I think that ship has sailed, but you know, we can explore all this.
You, Rob. I mean, obviously, you know, you did pretty well your first time. Not that great, but you did pretty well your first mm-hmm. time. I think now you're even more the complete package, which obviously would hurt you. But you know, the fact that you're you know much fitter,
mm-hmm.
You know, you got a nice beard, very handsome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I think, you know, everybody. So it's like you go in, it's like nobody wants to. So
it was all stars, you're saying?
Well, I don't know. I'm saying now, okay. If you went in, you know, you'd have all these.
But no, but it's returning players.
Oh, yeah. Returning players. Everyone would want to, you know, no one wants to, you know, they all want invites on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So they're going to like be, you know, currying your favor.
Yeah. All right. Well, we can talk this all through at a later date. Let's talk about the challenge here. Cause we're here with, what's it down to the final nine, final 10. Now I've never gotten through a full challenge season, Steven. So
yeah.
I'm really sort of like interested to know like where this goes from here. I think we have like a 2-hour episode coming up. So I don't know if it's going to be sort of like a normal hour of the challenge and then an hour that's the finale. I know they talk about TJ's final, but I have to be honest, I have no idea what TJ's final looks like.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting is that every season it is really different of the main challenge. And I think, I mean, if you've watched any of the MTV challenge, you know that the competitions have been slightly different here. Like there's not as much emphasis on math in the MTV challenge.
Yeah.
You know, in wordplay, like they're a little bit more physical and slightly less, let's call it cerebral. But so I am also curious, but the challenges for the final challenges for the MTV challenge in the past have been insane. Like, you know, it's climbing up a mountain, you know, in the Arctic cold, you know, and then spending the night like sleeping in a frozen river, you know,
I mean, it's overnight. It's
just, sometimes they have in the past. Yeah. A lot of I think recently a lot of them have been overnight and it'll be some horrible torture that they have to perform overnight. You know, they'll have to stay.
Oh my God.
One person standing the entire night, you know, yeah. I mean, it's some of the most extreme physical competition, I think, that is on reality television are these TJ's finals.
Oh, my God. And that's why they call it the challenge, the titular challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they've like dialed back the extremity a little bit recently. I mean, I'm sure Ali and Brian could speak to that more, but some of them have been like just like crazy to watch. You think, how can these human beings accomplish this? Like truly like going up, you know, a frozen mountain after zero sleep and you know, horrible conditions.
Yeah. I didn't know it got that intense.
Yeah. But so it is, I am curious, you know, and then some of them too are, you know, running around a track 100 times, you know, it's like, there's a pretty big difference in terms of how, you know, there's always gross food. There's are often gross food eating, which is, you know,
yeah,
I feel like you would do well at gross food.
No, I would not. You do well in that. That's, I would do well. Yeah. That, yeah. You're, that's like, you have like a superpower with that.
I'm pretty good at that. I mean, I'm no John Cochran who really, you know, was mm-hmm. great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, so it's exciting. Typically, I think there's like an elimination right before the finale. So presumably at least one or two more contestants are going to be eliminated. Mm-hmm. And then it's, you know, survival of the fittest.
Okay. So we have you here. I was hoping that we could do a little bit more of like a deep dive into the strategy of this season, because, you know, I mostly have been just sort of like letting it wash over me and just absorbing the show. I'm sort of, you know, taking notes kind of casually just because, you know, I have to do the exit interviews and sort of like, okay, what happened with this? What happened with this? But in terms of like the big picture strategy of the season, I'm sort of just like going off of like, okay, that's what they're saying. I listened to Allie and Brooke, because I don't know the rules of the game. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. So I was listening to Allie and Brian earlier today, and they were talking about how they've been kind of disappointed with the strategy of the season and feel like that strategically it has been a lot less strategic than a normal season of the challenge. And I hope I'm not misrepresenting what they were saying, but I thought that was kind of interesting in terms of like what is going on. How have you seen the strategy of the season so far?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think there's a lot of, you know, the challenge is a fundamentally much less strategic show than Survivor for a lot of reasons. One of them is, you know, the contestants. The other is just the format is a lot, you know, because it's so much more based on the actual challenges. And, you know, you don't just vote someone off, you vote someone into a challenge. And so that person always has the possibility of coming back. And then the other thing that is like probably the biggest distinction is that at the end of the challenge, a number of people compete, right? So it's not a zero sum game in terms of getting to get, you can get to the end with your closest allies and you can, you know, and then sort of have the opportunity. And of course, like whether you want to get to the end with a bunch of really weak people who you think you'll beat, or whether you want to, you know, do this, you know, protect the strong thing that it seems like a lot of people in this challenge house are doing. Obviously depends on sort of your own personal strategy and moral compass and kind of how you imagine that you would fare against the strong. Mm-hmm. Like for Tyson, it makes a ton of sense to keep the strong because he's probably the strongest. And certainly in terms of like, yeah, as an endurance athlete, you know, so it makes so much sense for him to be like banging this gong of like, let's keep the best athletes around when you're the best of the best. But for someone like further down that tier, it does seem, and I mean, maybe this is what Brian and Ali were getting at. Like, it does seem like there's less maneuvering from the people who are less favored by the kind of big group house strategy. And I think as a case in point, I was really flummoxed by Ben's decision this past week to put in Enzo, who is a great person for Ben to have in the game, you know, because for a couple of reasons. First of all, he's Ben's ally and friend. Second of all, he's definitely someone Ben can beat in the finals. And third, he is someone who would probably be put in elimination again ahead of Ben. So, you know, like one of the big concerns, right, among both, you know, both groups, the men and the women, is that you don't want to be paired with someone who sucks in the finals. So the women are like incentivized to get rid of the weak men, and the men are incentivized to get rid of the weak women. But if you're a man, you kind of want to keep the weak men. So Ben just caving because he was like worried he would become like ostracized or would become public enemy number one. Like, I don't understand that because nobody else in that house is going to make a decision based on how Ben voted, you know, 2 weeks before or even mm-hmm. the week before.
Yeah.
They're going to make it, especially this close to the end, they're going to make a decision based on what serves them best. So Ben should have used his leverage to make a move that served him.
Yeah, especially because that are we even going to have another men's elimination?
Who knows? I mean, maybe not. So it really does not make sense at all for Ben to make a choice that's mm-hmm. based on his, you know, social position in the house.
Yeah. To me, that's kind of like my read on how things are going, where sort of just like taking a step back. It seems like that, you know, Tyson and Angela, you know, had, you know, this plan from the beginning of that. Okay, we are going to take the people that win the daily challenges, and basically you win the daily challenge, you're in the club. Okay. Right. Anybody who wins the daily challenge, we don't put up on anybody else that wins the daily challenge, which seemed was a brilliant strategy for them early on, because either they win the challenge or they say, hey, remember, you know, we're not putting up who wins the daily challenges. And it kept them out of eliminations all the way through. But at this point, it seems like that they have a deal which only like behooves them, because I think they both feel like, hey, if I get into the finals, like I'll win. Like both of them are confident in their ability to win the final if they get there. And everybody else is kind of going along with a plan that doesn't really behoove them.
Yeah, 100%. And there's people who are, you know, very physically competitive, whom it makes sense they would be totally fine with this, right? They don't want to be eliminated before the final, and they want to, you know, I mean, someone like Danny, someone like, you know, who's obviously very, very fit, you know, could be, you know, it makes sense for them to like think, okay, maybe I can beat Tyson in a final, you know? But you know, for someone like Dom, or I mean, maybe even Ben thinks he can beat Tyson in a final, but I like Dom can't possibly think that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's just a level of delusion where you're like, I'm safe now. If I make it to the final, that's awesome. And who knows, right? Like Dom was a great physical competitor, or a great competitor in the challenges in Survivor. And maybe, you know, he's going to get lucky and get something that's in his wheelhouse.
Yeah. I mean, what would the consequences look like if you went against the group? I mean, how much safety are you ultimately getting? Because it was one thing when there was kind of like, okay, well, there's right. Survivor and there's Big Brother. And if you cross us, hey, like, you know, basically you're giving the numbers to Big Brother. But at this point in time, I mean, the numbers are not really there for, I mean, it's seemingly like with Angela and Alyssa working with the Survivor players. I mean, like what would the repercussions even be?
Right. And last, you know, when Sarah tried to cobble together an alliance of women who were not in this kind of big clique, that honestly made some sense, right? Because they could use it theoretically to affect both who won the challenge. Obviously, there was some leverage there. And then who was put into elimination. But then, of course, that didn't pan out at all for them. But there was some method to that madness. In terms of like Ben's choices, you know, to stick with this big group he's not necessarily a target anyway. And I do think there's an element of fear, right? Especially when you're playing the game, you don't necessarily know that well. And especially when every next day there could be some twist, you think, well, I want to be with the big group because as long as I'm inside that, as long as I'm protected by that, then some crazy thing isn't going to eliminate me. And at least I make it to the end. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, that's a loser's way of thinking. And I think that, like Ben turning against Sarah's group, you know, based on their history was really shocking to me. I mean, didn't Ben quit Survivor Winners at War? Like just so Sarah could get like a day further in the game.
He laid down his sword.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I don't know. I don't know what that relationship is, but you know, Sarah seems unhappy with him. What have you thought about Sarah in this season?
Definitely a different Sarah than we've seen in the past. You know, it strikes me that when we've seen her in both of her past two seasons, she's really been the dominant player or a dominant player. Certainly. I mean, she just killed it in Game Changers. And then she was, you know, in pretty consistently in the top group in Winners at War and was never really turned on in a significant way. Like she lost to Fire. She's just one of those people who, when they're in the dominant position, is great. And when they are in the losing position and an underdog just totally falls apart and like becomes like angry and recriminatory and, you know, petulant, because that's more of what we've seen from her this season.
So that's not how I see Sarah, where I kind of feel like that Sarah in Survivor Kagyan was a little bit more of like, she kind of like was in a good position, like kind of saw herself as like more of like in a position of power and kind of like overplayed her plan or where she was in the game. She came back in Game Changers and I think was really never looked at as somebody who was like really like she was kind of like under the radar and a swing vote and really took advantage of like her social relationships. And that's really, I think, that when she was like most deadly as a Survivor player was she would sort of like use her social game and charm to sort of win people over. And they wouldn't even realize that she would be throwing them under the bus, where basically she voted out like every single one of her allies in Survivor Game Changers. And she brought a lot of that also to Winners at War. But it seems like in a lot of ways that maybe because it's a different game that Sarah has sort of like, hey, social game be damned. Like that's not a part of what we're doing here. And she has made some relationships with the women, but it's kind of been like, hey, put me in the challenge. I'm just going to beat you, which is also ironic that she's really never been a winner in individual challenges in Survivor. But basically, she's just all in on the physical here.
That's interesting. I mean, you've seen Kagyan much more recently than I have. I mean, my recollection was that there was what kind of the tipping point. I guess people were frustrated with her at the time because, I mean, obviously that was a long time for her too, right? She's grown a lot since then. People rebelled against her because they thought that she was too Right, there was like the whole Queen Sarah thing, right, that Cass wanted to dethrone.
Yeah, she did not want to, like, she would not put up any of her people. Like, there were certain, like, they had to come up with a name, and her and Cass couldn't agree on what the name was going to be.
Right, right. That's interesting. I mean, that's
it's interesting that Tasha and Sarah ended up both on this season together. From all that. Yeah.
Yeah. That is interesting. Yeah, I don't know. It's a really good point. I mean, one thing that's clear is that people, you know, she does foster these incredible relationships with people, right? And we saw that even, sometimes you'd see that in little scenes. I remember there's like one scene where she was, you know, where Dom was exploding, where Sarah, you know, was having like some like heart-to-heart conversation, just randomly in the background, some heart-to-heart conversation with someone. And so clearly she, you know, still building those bonds. It's interesting that you say that though. Yeah, she's like she's less utilizing them, but maybe again, like, you know, she was in a position in both of those previous two seasons to utilize her bonds, and maybe that sense of powerlessness now, where she doesn't have the agency that she did, you know, is frustrating for her.
I've always thought she's such an interesting person on these shows, because I feel like that when she, like, going back to Survivor Game Changers, like, I feel like that she has like this social game where, like, go back to like, you know, like all these people that we know who played with her, you know, that, you know, Andrea's and Zeke's and Suri, they loved her when they were out there.
Yeah.
And that she used that to sort of like, you know, ingratiate herself, and then ultimately, you know, betrayed like all of these people, and none of them ever saw it coming. And I feel like that normally on these shows, when you have somebody like that, like, it kind of comes through a little bit more to the viewer, where the viewer also like feels very warm to these people. But for whatever reason, and maybe it's like that she doesn't put the energy in the confessionals, the viewers are, I feel like, never get that side of her in her confessional, where they feel like that they can see it. And I think it's one of the reasons why she's kind of like a hard person to understand on these shows.
Oh, 100%. I mean, her confessionals are always like shockingly bland. And then, you know, other people are, you know, talking about how much they're in love with her. I mean, Sierra Dawn Thomas, obviously, you know, gifted her the legacy advantage.
And she's, you know, made some questionable calls. Yeah.
in her alliances.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And beyond. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what sort of my point was, like, you know, when she, or less about the confessionals, but like when she is in these positions to, you know, backstab her allies and make these moves, like, that's a very fun position to be in. Like, when you are like, when you're in the Matrix, you're in Neo, and here she's like outside, you know, she's like not able to impact anything. And I think that's why she's having such a hard season, is because, like, I think she's like, that's a very frustrating experience. And maybe it's because her social relationships are less relevant here, because it's so challenge based, because she's consistently out of power. And obviously there's an element of ego too, right? She clearly thinks of herself as like a dominant physical competitor, and that just has not yet been the case. And so that must be consistently frustrating.
Yeah. It's because, you know, so much of it is out of her hands. Yeah. That's a good point of, like, it's like basically like, hey, we're coming for you. There's nothing you can do about it. We're not going to give you what you want when you want it. And so she has like no other like recourse but to sort of like lash out at other people, and then basically just go back to, you know, put me in the different challenges so I can win. I think that one of the really interesting things in the season has also been the relationship or lack of a relationship with Sarah and Angela, where
the rivalry. Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this has been very exciting, because Angela, like, in her own way, is very like matter of fact, very, you know, very blunt, like very plain, but she almost is like, in a lot of ways, like comes across as like emotionless about things.
Yeah.
Where Sarah is like getting like angrier and angrier and angrier. Angela is just like still.
Is that what Angela was like in her Big Brother days?
At times. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that the thing that's really come to light, I think, in the challenge is that she is like a stone cold killer on these shows, and is like, you know, and I have to say, not boring. Okay. Very engaging.
Is that like a buzzword around Angela being boring?
Steven, stop saying that. Come on.
This is my problem. Like, I don't know a lot of the history of these contestants. Like, David is the one that like flummoxes me the most, because why is he there? Like, he was like first out on Big Brother, and he's his confessionals are consistently terrible. He like got gassed out by Enzo. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, what, yeah.
So David, he was on Big Brother 21, and sort of got like a really like raw deal in terms of, he got really screwed. It was a very unfair twist, like famously, like, and it was like very unfortunate. Like, it really seemed as though like the people of color were targeted unfairly at the start of that season. Then, but they had like a twist where they didn't really leave the house. They just put them in a uniform and they like hung out around the house. He was the first of those people that he just got like selected like a year out of the game, but he got to like hang out in the house for like 4 more weeks.
But not to play the game, just to like,
one of them was going to have a chance. It was like, basically it was like, it was like Edge of Extinction, but they got the chance to get back into the game. He didn't get back into the game, but then the next season was Big Brother All-Stars and they brought him back for that. And like, okay, well, what, maybe if he gets a fair shake, maybe he'll have a shot, but he's not somebody who is like a strategist. You know, like he is like, you know, he's into CrossFit. I talked to him on the exit interview. He seems like he's like taken his fitness to another level. But as far as like being somebody who's like a really like a game player, like that's not David.
But the fitness thing, I mean, he also did not seem to perform super well in the challenges.
He's a big CrossFit guy. I think he also has in his background, like, I think he had like a lot of a huge like weight loss story also. And then
what is it that the fans are connecting to with him? That's what
nothing, like, nothing. What is, the fans are like, why was David on the on the cast? So yeah, that was somebody that like you that just because the people are here from the shows doesn't mean like, you know, Sarah and Ben are here. And it's not like that, you know, the fans were clamoring for, you know, Sarah and Ben to play.
But you can see why. I mean, you know, someone like Ben was there. You know, he's like,
I cannot, to be honest. and I say as full disclosure, like I like Ben, I feel like that he is you know, he's always been you know, a nice guy with me. So I've had like many nice conversations with Ben, but I kind of felt like that Ben's story was kind of had reached its conclusion in Winners at War. And I kind of felt like that to put him in like in this environment, like I feel like it was not like a great spot to put Ben in. So, you know, and it seems like that, like based on some of the stories, it seems like he's really like struggling out there. You know, and he's had struggles during his other Survivor experiences. Right. So like, I thought that was honestly a curious decision.
Like, someone who's got, you mean mental health struggles. Is that what you mean? Or,
yeah, like I don't want to like, you know, I'm not a therapist or anything like that, but it seems like that his struggles have been well documented, especially like towards the end of, you know, Winners at War. So I don't know. I thought that was a curious decision to have, Ben come back.
I mean, they cast 4 people with mental health struggles with the hope that, you know, something will happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, that was wild, I thought, when I saw the cast list.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem like it is a question. I mean, you think of like they could have cast basically any Survivor players, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're like, why? Why these ones? There's definitely some like questionable choices. Even, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, so many people could have been cast. Mm-hmm. I haven't been thinking about that because it's you know, you just spiral out, you know, like all these other people, you can't think that way. Like this is what we have in front of us. You know, you got to learn radical acceptance, you know, give thanks to God for what we've got.
Yeah. I mean, Sarah to me, like made some more sense because I feel like that, she seems like that she's like really very willing to like put her body on the line and go all out in these, you know, events. And Danny, I thought was somebody who was like a really natural fit, for this because,
well, I've been a long time Danny fan. I mean, I loved Danny on his season and, you know, probably disproportionately even to like the impact he had on the season. And now, I mean, he's been so fun. Like the Kiki Confessionals, it's amazing. Well, it's funny now you can like hear, you know, that like the producers there are like, this
sure.
Like you can hear them be like, so what would Kiki think about this challenge?
They made that his thing. Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. And so the Danny is somebody who like, I feel like we've really gotten to know him a lot better in the challenge than from Survivor.
Yeah. A lot of his humor, I feel like, shines through. I mean, that's honestly one of the things that I think you see even maybe more in The Challenge than you do in Survivor. Just like little moments.
Yeah.
You know, they'll go to like, they'll show you the people on the sidelines, like cheering, you know, it's just like a brief little thing. But those are some of my favorite things, you know, where there's some huge rivalry between two characters. But then, you know, you've got Sarah cheering for Angela when Angela finished the challenge last week. You know, I think that's really cool. Like that there's like still this kind of camaraderie of we're all in this together, like, you know, in this game, we're against each other. But like as humans, we're doing this, we're having this experience together.
Has there been any people that you like had no exposure to previously from Big Brother or The Amazing Race or from Love Island that you came to like from watching them on The Challenge this season?
I really liked Cash. Lady Cash, right? There was Boy Cash and Lady Cash.
And Cashette. Yeah.
Her confessionals were just, I got a lot of pleasure out of just like her sort of like, what am I doing here? Like, this is great for me.
That could be me. That could be me. I could have that. Yeah.
You know who's also killing it in the confessionals? Who, you know, we've seen before, but maybe not to this extent, is Desi. She's great.
Yeah.
She's had like consistently great confessionals that are like narrative, as well as, I mean, Tyson's confessionals also.
Well, yeah, it goes without saying. I mean, the Tyson. Truly,
like, this is next level. I feel like he's so good. I mean, obviously he's great at the challenge. And he's good at the strategy. And he's good at the physical parts. But like, we've all known his confessionals are funny, you know, ever since like Man Tiara on Token Chains. But like, he's just become so good. Like every single one of them is a hit. Like the one about, I like to be the richest person everywhere I am. That's why I only go into cheap restaurants. It's such a great confessional because it ties in, you know, both what was happening in the game with whoever it was making more money than him. Mm-hmm. And it was like a personal, it was like both bragging and like negging himself. It was just such a great, I don't know. Yeah. He's amazing. He's really good.
Yeah. And you could tell the producers, they like really get Tyson. They know what he's going for. Like, I feel like that it's almost like, I feel like that from what I understand, like, you know, the challenge season is like a movie and he's like, so, you know, cast in this role, like, and he's doing like a great job of playing this part in this season.
Oh yeah. And he's what does that mean? Actually, I have no idea what you mean.
Like that you need this person in a challenge season, don't you? Yeah.
The sort of like guy who's dominant and kind of like snickering.
The cocky strategist who's basically saying, nobody can beat me, you know, and then making fun of the other people who are out there, you know, sort of like the villain, but the villain that you, you know, I don't know if you even hate, but it's sort of like that, you know, the villain that is like the interesting villain.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he is very much that. I think you're right. I mean, just so many great, and in the challenge, you know, those are often the heroes, right? It's not, I think if you saw the same content from Tyson in a Survivor season, you'd think like, oh, this guy can't possibly win. But, you know, there's a little bit more swagger in the challenge, you know, like there's less of the need to have the rootable everyman hero in the challenge. So, you know, it's still, yeah.
Yeah. I think that his partnership with Angela has been very interesting because I feel like that they sort of have like, you know, a real like a good cop, bad cop energy that they bring to it where, you know, Tyson is going to be the person who's like more warm and like gregarious and sort of like, and, you know, like says what he means, but more maybe like says things in like a little bit more of like a veiled way where, you know, Angela, I think, is much more of like the heavy. And like says it like bluntly of like, hey, if you don't do exactly what you're going to say, what we say, like you're going to be in the challenge and you should have won. You should have won the daily if you wanted to, you know, have any sort of say in this decision.
Yeah. Didn't Tyson say that she was his best ally ever in any of his shows? I mean, how must Coach and Boston Rob feel?
Well, I, you know what, like thinking that through, you know, you sort of hear that and it's a little bit like, whoa. But, you know, I think it's probably a fair statement. Like, I think that probably the answer to that question is Jervis prior to this. But, you know, you get the sense that I feel like that Angela is like, you know, she is like extremely loyal to the people that she is that she is loyal to, like, and much more like of an attack dog in that way, where I think that Jervis probably would have been like, if Tyson got voted out, like you saw, like there were conversations where Jervis like entertained, like whoever it was, like, you know, what Hayden and Caleb saying like, hey, we should go after Tyson. And like Jervis, like hurt, listened to those conversations where could you imagine somebody coming to Angela and saying like, hey, we should throw Tyson into the elimination. She'd be like, that's a non-starter for me. We're not doing that.
True. The way she shut down Ben, I mean, was just remarkable. You know, like none of your opinions matter. Like none of them, like he can't choose one person other than the one single person you want. It's interesting. The other thing too, is Angela really carries her weight in terms of mm-hmm. winning challenges, in terms of protecting Tyson. Right. So it's not just strategically, it's also in like other aspects of the game.
Yeah. And so it's been like a really interesting pairing, and maybe it's because, you know, that the challenge, and correct me if I'm wrong, traditionally has a male winner and a female winner. So they're not fighting for right. the same prize. They're basically fighting for, okay, let's just get, like, we both need to make sure that we get to the end, then our fate is ultimately going to be in our own hands once we get there. So let's make sure that we are both, doing everything that we can to get to this point. I think that also, like, you know, Tyson is the person that gets to like have the fun confessionals, and the person who is like, it, like, I think it's a very good relationship, because I think that they sort of like complement each other's, strengths and weaknesses.
But I think too, like the fact that they both can get to the end is maybe why it makes it feel like a more solid allyship, because in Survivor, there is always that question of, can I beat this person at the end? Will, if I can beat them, they know that too, and they're going to try to betray me. There's always some suspicion. So you never have, you know, full allyship, right? There's always a little bit of, there's only one of us can win. Whereas with Angela, you know, they can be completely comfortable and completely unified in sharing a goal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's been a lot of talk about like, hey, I don't want to be partnered with this person for the final. You know, this person can't swim. Leo. This person is slow. I don't want to do it. So how does this work with the finals in terms of partners?
So really the way finals work varies dramatically. Sometimes it's fully individual. Sometimes you're partnered up with like a person for the whole final. And then recently they've been doing it, which is really fun. And especially on the challenge All-Stars, they have been doing it where you are partnered with each person for a leg of the challenge. So everyone gets partnered with every guy gets partnered with every girl. So like you'll get this partner on the first leg, you'll get that partner on the second leg, you'll get this partner on the third leg. So you just have to kind of
hope. To wait for like, hey, I'm waiting for my partner is with a dud for the previous leg. I'm ready to go.
If you're out of other people, yeah, you would have to wait for them. I mean, it really depends, but like that's not always the case.
Is it like the first person to get there? Is that how it works?
Well, the first person to get there, I guess I honestly don't remember. I think the first person to get there would then partner with, but sometimes you're with the same person throughout the whole final. So mm-hmm. that's not always the case. You know, one challenge that was true. I think All-Star Season 2, that was not the case. So it really varies, but it is pretty common that you're paired up with someone. And so the idea of not wanting to, you know, be totally messed up by that, mm-hmm. Just because someone terrible is left in the game who, you know, you dramatically physically outperform, like that must be so frustrating.
Steven, do you think that they will do another challenge USA?
Yeah, probably, right? It's got to be really cheap to produce and like get pretty good ratings.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they probably spend a lot of money on like the actual challenges most weeks. Like it feels like that must like cost something to, you know, you're like driving around cars or like doing like, you know, dropping people off buildings and have like a tractor trailer with that's driving around. So I feel like that they spend a lot of their budget on the actual like.
Buildings actually they probably don't have a lot, not expensive. Tractor trailer also not hugely expensive as reality TV budgets mm-hmm. go, or as TV budgets go. Yeah,
yeah, I guess not. But I feel like it's more expensive than, you know, like whatever, you know, some of these like Survivor challenges are. We don't even need to get into exploring like Big Brother, but. All right. So, Steven, give me some names of people you want to see on future Challenge USA.
Well, I mean, one of the big ones who I was surprised was not, who was rumored to be on this season Wendell Holland, who I think would have been would be amazing at this game. You know, he's super athletic, super charismatic, very strategic. I mean, I think he's, you know, he would be amazing at this.
Well, I know he had been, he recently had knee surgery.
Interesting.
And shout out to Wendell if he's listening. Wendell and Bryce have been covering this season as well on the Purple Pants podcast. But he had knee surgery. So I don't know if he was asked and or interested, but you know, he did have that knee procedure in the last couple of months, but you know, and I think Bryce also that, you know, in talking with Bryce, I know he would love to do it. I think that
Bryce would be super fun.
He would be super fun.
To go back on Survivor. Like, gosh, like why have they not?
I feel like maybe this is the better way to go because, and Bryce, I think, has a physicality that I think that people like underestimate. And I think that this would be
now he's like super fit. I mean, compared to when he was on Cagayan. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that this would be, you know, a really good spot for him to come out and play. Cause I really don't know when they're going to do returning players on Survivor.
Yeah. I mean, and they say, you know, no returning players before season 40. So, you know.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like that's like where, like, Dominic Abate, I would have never imagined him going out on to play in the challenge, but I think he's just like, hey, like, all right, well, what am I going to do? Like, sit around and wait for Survivor to call me forever.
He's been very fun. He's been a great, I mean, really the cast has been very fun, and especially, yeah, I mean, I love seeing all the Survivor people just do so well. Mm-hmm. What's your, yeah. Okay. Who else would be great? I mean, JT Thomas, obviously, in any venue, I'm always happy to see.
Yeah. Could you imagine?
He would be great. He would be so good at this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, you don't think so? I mean, he's like,
Know better than me. Yeah.
I actually think he would kill at this show. Like, I think he would be very well suited for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we haven't seen him since Game Changers. I think this has been his, I guess it's, you know, we haven't been 14 seasons. I would say this has been his longest layoff, but it feels like it.
Less opportunity on the challenge to like do something explosive, you know, in the way that he loves to do. He's like, all you got to do is compete and be like decently and like mildly strategic. And he's an excellent competitor.
But I can see him like, oh, I should throw myself into the challenge because that's like, there's different like big schemes that you can come up with, I think, on this show.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know.
What about when Sarah wanted to take on Enzo and in Hall Brawl?
I mean, that's just crazy.
I don't think she knew it was Hall Brawl yet.
But even when she was up, yeah, maybe not.
She's like, I could beat Enzo in anything.
Yeah. If you were on the challenge,
yeah,
and, you know, the final was the next day, and the final was going to be Big Brother trivia, and you had a Hall Brawl against anybody, would you quit or would you do the Hall Brawl?
I mean, against anybody? Like, I mean, like, give me a person.
Let's say against Enzo.
I wouldn't like my chances. Like,
let's say against Cinco. Okay. Like Cinco. He's probably the biggest guy. Yeah. Right?
I guess.
No, you're like going to get, you know, a real, you know, this is a Hall Brawl.
I don't know. Like, I have to see, is there any like hack to Hall Brawl, or is it just like an immovable force against a very stoppable object? Yeah. like, I wonder, like, could you sort of like, just like dive down and then he like goes flying over you and then you run to the thing.
But then, I mean, people have tried that. It's not the most effective. Because like you got to get up, you got to dust yourself off.
Like maybe if there was like the old man from Squid Game to tell me like, oh, we used to do Hall Brawl all the time when I was a kid. This is what you need to do. Like, all right, listen to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Steven. I know you have a busy calendar. I appreciate you making time to talk about the challenge with us.
This is so fun.
Anything else that you want to get off your chest?
Oh my God. It's just flown by. I feel like we were just getting started here, Rob.
I know. We're just, spitballing, talking about the challenge.
I know. It was super fun. Like, as I've said,
Survivor asserted itself once and for all. Most dominant show, unstoppable.
I mean, definitely. I mean, to be fair, like, there were very few amazing racers. I mean, amazing racers not exactly cast to be, you know, as strategists, but they really got the short end of the stick here with you know, not having a lot of allies to.
But as far as Survivor versus Big Brother is concerned, like, it's been settled.
Well, I mean, was that in contention?
Mm-hmm. Do you have winner picks?
No, I don't think so. I like to be ignorant, you know, and winner picks, I'm always wrong. So, I mean, I think Tyson, I don't see how Tyson can lose a
Do you see win? I know you watch the for the winner edit all the time on Survivor. Do you see a challenge winner edit based on your challenge edgic experience?
Well, my I have been frequently wrong about the challenge winner. I'm told that basically it's like it's much simpler with the challenge that whoever has the most confessionals just is the winner.
That's how you win. Yeah.
They are not like interested in hiding them or creating a
you
narrative
need enough,
around
you enough know, confessionals to qualify for the final. Yeah,
exactly.
For TJ's final, and then you get and then you win.
But it might be different editors, right? Because this is CBS rather than MTV. So I don't know. Like, Buna Murray still producing it? I assume.
I think it's the same editors.
Yeah. I honestly don't know. So it's, but there might be like different, you know, executives weighing in on what they need to see from a winner. So, I mean, who knows? All right. I mean, who knows?
Okay. Well, Stephen, I know you have to run. So thank you so much for doing this. We'll be chatting again soon. Survivor is less than 2 weeks away.
Oh, my God. Wow. That's so exciting. Do you have any last who's your ideal future Survivor challenge player? I guess you said Bryce already.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of anybody from the last couple of seasons to go out and play. I mean, there's can we get Lydia on the challenge?
That would be very fun.
Yes. Yeah.
That would be very fun.
All right. Well, this was super fun. I am very excited that we are going to have exit interviews I guess we're going to talk to everybody. They asked us like, hey, do you want to talk to the winner or do you want to talk to everybody? I don't know if they're going to do a 2x2. I was like, I guess everybody. So I don't know. I think that we're going to have like a day of challenge exit interviews coming up on Thursday.
Wow. That's very exciting. That'll be really fun.
Yeah.
All right. Who's your winner pick?
I mean, got to stick with Tyson, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel
Tyson
like
and Angela and I mean, they, yeah,
I mean, it's, I guess maybe Sarah is the only other person that you could see from the women.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, like why not? Like Desi, like why not?
I guess so. I mean,
yeah. She's had a lot of confessionals. I mean, you know, in terms of like winner, like mm-hmm. she's had a lot, like almost like a disproportionate amount compared to how much she's factored into the actual drama of the show.
Oh, interesting.
Well, that's always the Survivor tell. And again, like we don't know about the show. Like if you like have a disproportionate influence in the narrative versus the show, like then you're like probably,
you know, really, with Desi and Ben, like, again, I have no idea what that relationship is like. I mean, they were on the same Survivor season. Like, I feel like that hasn't come up like at all.
Maybe they mentioned it to each other. Like, hey, good to see you. Like,
hey, remember when we all were on Survivor together? Yeah.
Yeah. That's but, you know. Probably. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Stephen Fishback. Follow him. He's at Stephen Fishback. Check out everything that he's working on. Anything you want to tell people to check out?
Yeah, just Twitter. You know, I mean, I don't tweet that much anymore. Do I? I don't think.
But when he does.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah. All right. Be sure if you have not checked out the challenge wrap up, make sure you subscribe. robinsonwebsite.com/challenge feed. Thank you so much for joining us here today. And we will talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.